This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, sitting in for Brooke Gladstone. September marked 20 years since 9/11, and the anniversary was commemorated by remembrances, television specials, and retrospectives. But amid all the coverage, one legacy of that day went largely unmentioned.
It barely merits international headlines these days, but America's Guantanamo Bay prison is still operational. 40 inmates.
Still operational, even though it's been 2 decades since the attacks, and there's still no trial date for the accused.
Today, pretrial hearings resumed against the alleged 9/11 mastermind. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed joined 4 co-defendants in the pretrial hearings for the first time since the proceedings were suspended in February of 2020.
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and his 4 co-defendants are examples of the inconsistencies of Guantanamo. Sometimes they're headline news. Sometimes we barely hear about them for years. Since January 2002, Guantanamo, Gitmo, has been both fiercely scrutinized and essentially ignored by the government and the public.
Well, my coverage of Guantanamo slowed down because things stopped happening. I mean, the word news itself suggests that you're talking about something new.
Jess Braven is the Wall Street Journal's Supreme Court reporter, and he keeps tabs on Guantanamo, which he first covered in 2002.
When you have this kind of Groundhog Day situation where it's always the same, there's no political movement about the overall future of the facility, there's no legal movement about the progress of these cases. If those things are not happening, then there's really nothing to say. It's just sort of, you know, the sun rose yesterday.
I also cover Guantanamo. I've made 3 trips there, and I debated whether I should go back for the 20th anniversary of 9/11. But when I weighed what I thought I'd learn there with the cumbersome process of getting to Gitmo and everything that entails, government charter flights from Air Force bases, bus trips, ferry rides, the Defense Department permissions required, the COVID precautions, I decided it wasn't worth it. And I believe I made the right decision because little to nothing newsworthy ended up happening at those hearings. I'm not the only reporter making those calculations because Gitmo is not a typical news beat. There's a political story, there's a legal story, there's a prison with some prisoners awaiting trial and others being held for years without being charged. But Guantanamo's legal cases are difficult to cover because years have passed with barely any progress being made, and that can make for monotonous copy or no copy.
Incremental reporting is important, and in a trial that has a clear idea of when the beginning and the end date is, you can do it. I mean, one of the trials going on these days is that of Elizabeth Holmes, the Theranos executive. People following it every day. What's the latest development? Here, though, when the increments are so tiny and their significance is so unclear, it becomes almost an impossible task to justify someone spending time reading about it or, in our case, writing about it.
Then there's the problem of the war on terror being 2 decades old, a war we now know was plagued by poor planning, bad intelligence, and state-sanctioned torture. For a while, that made front-page news and congressional uproar. Not anymore.
I think from the perspective of policymakers in Washington, everyone moved on. There was not much interest in the war in Afghanistan, as we know, until its rather dysfunctional end. And there was even less interest in this backwater residue of the Afghan conflict, where a handful of prisoners were still detained. President Biden's on record as wanting to see this closed, but it's not a top priority for him. He has his hands full with various domestic issues and foreign issues. It's an even lower priority for the Congress, which has actually stood in the way of presidents closing Guantanamo if they wanted to. Congress, when it had a Democratic majority, enacted obstacles to President Obama closing Guantanamo Bay. The Republican majority had no interest in closing it when it was in charge. So it's just there. I mean, you can think of it as sort of like an orphaned enterprise.
One reason the military court's legal agenda is so stagnant is that Gitmo was given a completely different set of rules to run by. And as Jess Braven explains, that meant nothing would be simple.
It turns out that it is very difficult to create a court system and a legal system from scratch, because the one that the United States already has, the one that evolved out of the British colonial system into the current federal and state systems we have now, it has spent two centuries answering legal questions that arise, how to deal with various things that occur in a criminal trial, how to deal with evidence, how to deal with conduct of attorneys, how to procedurally address different issues and questions that arise. Here, this new system was essentially devised as a makeshift replacement for something very different that President Bush envisioned in November of 2001.
Soon after the war on terror began, I authorized a system of military commissions to try foreign terrorists accused of war crimes. Military commissions have been used by presidents from George Washington to Franklin Roosevelt to prosecute war criminals. Because the rules for trying enemy combatants in a time of conflict must be different from those for trying common criminals or members of our own military.
What he envisioned then was essentially a near summary proceeding that could have a trial and move to execution within months, because it was explicitly based on a singular event that took place during World War II under FDR's administration.
When you say execution, are you referring to executing people?
Yes, I'm referring to executing people, because that's what occurred in the German saboteurs case in the 1940s. In that case, you had eight men who were arrested in the United States and tried in secret by a military commission that was housed in the Department of Justice, and six of them were executed by the electric chair within a couple months. That was the specific model that was on the mind of the Bush administration when they authorized military commissions. But what we have now is something that is nothing like that.
That's right. You're dealing with the men who are middle-aged and older and increasingly of failing health that we were holding at $15 million a year. And if we were doing that in Charleston, South Carolina, or anywhere else in the United States, I think we could have a rational conversation about it. But Guantanamo is this brand for the war on terror, and that has lots of implications to it.
Michel Parody is a senior attorney for the Department of Defense who has represented defendants at Guantanamo since the final years of the Bush administration. Gitmo's court and prison were established in Cuba to be beyond the reach of usual U.S. law. But Parody says Gitmo's jury-rigged legal system is collapsing from its own lack of structure.
If there's been one truth about the Guantanamo hearings, particularly the 9/11 case, it's that there are two steps back for every step forward, and arguments that become about arguments, and then arguments about the arguments we're going to have about arguments. And so with any one hearing, with rare exceptions where, for example, witnesses might be called, like in the torture hearings that were taking place right before the hearings were suspended for the COVID pandemic for another year and a half, I would have had a lot of trouble saying that anything particularly interesting or newsworthy is likely to happen at a hearing, other than lawyers, again, just talking about what kind of trial, what kind of hearing we might ultimately have if and when we ever have a trial in the 9/11 case.
Parody calls the court at Guantanamo a, quote, Kafkaesque bureaucratic nightmare, one that even journalists who cover Gitmo regularly can find difficult to navigate, and that inexperienced reporters may have no hope of following.
I would actually have a lot of sympathy for reporters going down to watch these hearings, because something very consequential might be being debated, something that gets to the core of whether or not the Constitution applies or whether or not the CIA has to answer for its use of torture during the early years of the war on terrorism. These are incredibly consequential issues, but they end up getting debated in this highly abstruse language that only really the lawyers involved understand, because of levels of euphemism and bureaucracy, and the classification system will often require people to use specific jargon in order to not run afoul of the classification rules. And so it's almost as if people are speaking an entirely different language that really does conceal the real stakes of often what is going down.
I've sat in that military court and witnessed that dense legal jargon that is barely comprehensible that you're talking about. I mean, debates about the law of war. What is war? When is a war over? Which may be interesting discussions, but why is that happening 20 years after the 9/11 attacks when you're still not able to bring it to trial? You walk out of that court after having been there hours, feeling that you have nothing to report, yet the fact that you have nothing to report helps explain why this trial has still not happened 20 years later.
That's exactly right. There has been a refusal to answer the basic questions. And the military commission judges who, and I don't mean this in any derogatory way, because they're all professional military officers and judge advocates and probably quite good military lawyers. But when it comes to presiding over complex international terrorism cases, they're complete amateurs. These are not cases that are typically brought ever in the military. These cases are normally brought in places like the Southern District of New York or the Eastern District of Virginia. And so the military judges will often find themselves completely outmatched and overwhelmed by the complexity of the issues in front of them. And their instinct invariably is going to be to punt the ball down the field. And so that difficult questions don't get answered. And regrettably, I think there has been a tendency by the U.S. courts to do the same, to look for ways to not answer the hard questions that could be seen as politically controversial because they relate to Guantanamo, because Guantanamo makes everything a little more tense. It makes everything a little more sensitive and seemingly politicized, even when it leads to this kind of almost pathological dysfunctionality in the actual criminal justice process, where you need certainty, right? That's the one thing lawyers need to know. They need to know what the rules are so they can try a case. And so almost every actor, responsible actor in the military commission system, has a vested interest in avoiding the hard questions. And that leads to incredible delays and uncertainty, which in turn leads to more incredible delays and uncertainty.
For all these reasons, covering Guantanamo is a major reporting challenge. But there is one reporter who has essentially devoted her life to covering Gitmo and who spent more time there than any other journalist.
Unless I actually make the trip myself to Guantanamo to watch a hearing, I'm relying almost entirely on the tweets of Carol Rosenberg from the New York Times, because that is how almost everyone who follows these cases learns what's going on in the hearing rooms on a day-to-day basis, because the government refuses to have cameras in the courtroom. There are very limited access. There are remote viewing sites in the national capital regions, but the access to those is very limited. And so the lack of press coverage just makes it hard, even for insiders like myself, to know what's going on, unless Carol Rosenberg is following it.
Parody said even some lawyers with security clearances depend on Carol Rosenberg for updates. And he said reporters with less experience often end up falling into a Gitmo marketing trap of sorts.
Reporters will go down, typically for the very first time, to this essentially movie set.
Why do you call it a movie set?
Because Guantanamo is one of the most secure, well-established naval bases in the entire world. There are Starbucks, there's a Subway, there's a Kentucky Fried Chicken, there's a McDonald's, there's an ice cream parlor, there's bowling and tennis courts and a golf course. It's a place like any other military base around the world. It's a small town. Yet there's this little corner where they have set up tents that are largely empty or at least underused, where it's designed, in essence, to look like we're operating in the foothills of Afghanistan in order to make people think this is part of, this war on terrorism. And I think that betrays the very boring and almost depressing reality of it being this place with really, fundamental breaks from the American tradition of the rule of law and human rights, with a certain kind of just bureaucratic dysfunctionality, massive waste, fraud, and abuse by government contractors and government agents alike, so that it costs hundreds of millions of dollars to maintain this process. But it's always sold. A lot of money is spent to package it as this place that is the tip of the spear in the war on terrorism.
Parody describes it as self-defeating legal theater, and it didn't have to be this way.
The contrast between this and, say, the Nuremberg trials after World War II is so astounding that it's hard to, even think about them in the same breath.
Jess Braven.
I mean, there were criticisms of the Nuremberg trials, but if we think about the way the Allied powers approached them, they were public, they had newsreels, and there were newsreel cameras in the courtroom.
The old Palace of Justice at Nuremberg stages what is without doubt the greatest trial in the annals of the human race. In the dock today are the men who, for 12 years, swaggered across the continent of Europe, ordering mass murder, slavery, and robbery on a scale which staggers a sane imagination.
The International Military Tribunal sentences you to death by hanging.
Very soon after the last sentence had been read, the people of Nuremberg were rushing to learn their former leader's fate. Perhaps, as they read, they remembered the appalling cost of the Second World War.
It was actually staged in a way to make it understandable and to allow the world to watch these proceedings, because the Allies wanted to say, A, we were fighting a terribly evil enemy, and B, we are treating them properly in accord with the rule of law. Those are the lessons we want the world to take away. And over time, although there were, of course, criticisms in the 40s, that's really been the takeaway from the Nuremberg proceedings. And they also happened extremely quickly. Within months of the end of World War II, the surviving Nazi leadership was put on trial. And here, 20 years after 9/11, trial hasn't even started, even though these defendants tried to plead guilty more than 10 years ago.
So what is the best way for reporters to cover the grinding, expensive, dysfunctional legal process happening at Gitmo? A place where the government's rules for media access are frequently changing. How should journalists maintain public interest in this important story when there's very little new to report on a monthly or even yearly basis? Jess Braven and I, and other reporters who cover Guantanamo, constantly wrestle with that question.
I don't think we can afford to ignore it. I think that when reporters ignore things or don't have the bandwidth to follow things they could, that's when mischief tends to occur. So I think that we have to continue watching it, and we have to look for things that might be an opportunity to make this story resonate and be compelling.
Jess Braven now covers the Supreme Court for the Wall Street Journal and continues to monitor Guantanamo. Thanks for talking about this.
You bet. See you in 20 years.